Speaking of veterans, this guy played 14 years, including a stop in Atlanta in the major leagues, won a World Series with the Yankees, now doing an outstanding job on ESPN with baseball tonight. A big part of the coverage. Mark Teixeira joining us on the Loud Security Systems Newsmaker line. Mark, thanks for coming on the program this morning. How are you?
I'm doing great, guys. Looking forward to the game today.
Yeah, it's going to be obviously one based on the first four games that we've seen in this series that's going to go down to the wire. What does it mean when you see a guy for the second time, like both of these teams are going to be seeing from the respective starter on the other team in the same series?
You know, I think this is one of those opportunities that coaching can actually really help in baseball. I mean, I'm one of those guys that's always believed that players win games and you know, analytics can get a little bit overwhelming, especially for young players. But when you see a guy so quickly again in a playoff series, and especially guys that pitch so well, I mean, Jack Flaherty, other than the Duvall home run, Jack Flaherty was incredible in game one. And then you see, game two. And then you see Folty was dominant as well. So those guys pitched really well. Can you use your analytics and your coaching staff to make the proper adjustments? And I think whatever staff does the best to say, hey, listen, you know, we might want to be sitting on this slider, or we might want to attack the fastball a little bit more early in the counts, and you know, check out these numbers or check out these pitches. That'll be the deciding factor.
You also have catchers that are supposed to be able to pick up on the little things. If somebody's cheating because this game was just recently played, aren't they supposed to pick that up pretty quickly?
No doubt. And you have two great catchers in Brian McCann and Yadier Molina. I mean, two veterans that have been there, done that. And I think we're going to see a very crisp game. I've enjoyed this series more than any of the games of all four of the division series because of how crisp the games have been. I mean, you have some really good pitching. You have timely hitting. I mean, no one's really hit with runners in scoring position. But at the end of the game, it seems like it's you know, all hands on deck. You know, guys like Adam Duvall coming in and getting hits and you know, scratching runs late in the game. And that's really what baseball's all about, is manufacturing those runs. The home runs and strikeouts are fun for the regular season, but I love this brand of baseball in October.
Mark, can I ask, I don't know if you've ever thought about it, the pitchers, who has more pressure on them going to bed last night, waking up this morning? I'm assuming it's a starting pitcher as opposed to a hitter. But as a hitter, can you get yourself a little bit tangled up going into a day like today?
You can absolutely. And I think you see guys, and it happened to me during my career. As a hitter, you feel like every time up, you only have four chances, right? So every time up, you feel like you have to do something. A pitcher can control his emotions a little bit better, knowing that, hey, listen, I need to be out of here for six or seven innings. I have my game plan. I'm in control on the bump here. I know exactly what my game plan is, and I have to execute. As a hitter, you're like, hey, man, there's a man on first and second and two outs. This might be the only chance for us to score. I have to get it done. And every time that you press, every time you squeeze that bat tighter, it's harder and harder to get it done.
Mark Teixeira from ESPN with us on the Loud Security Systems Newsmaker line. As a hitter, if you're dealing with an injury like Freddie Freeman is, he's not admitting it, but I think everybody knows it is what it is at this point. How does that affect the little nuances of your swing?
It doesn't help. I tell people all the time, and first of all, I agree with you guys, Freddie's not right. And it's not like all of a sudden in the playoffs he stopped hitting. I mean, the last week or two of the season, you could tell he wasn't right as well. But I tell everybody, it is extremely difficult to hit when you are 100%. Extremely difficult. Now you're 70% or even worse, it's very tough. And so for me, if I'm a power hitter, especially like Freddie, a guy that is supposed to drive the ball, supposed to hit home runs, yeah, he had that really nice home run in game one. Other than that, I haven't seen him driving the ball. I've seen him missing pitches that he usually doesn't miss. And so it just makes it that much tougher.
The idea that you guys, this generation, and you are part of this generation, fairly recently retired, the idea that you might face five different guys or four different guys over the course of the game. You know, I tell the story, David Ortiz, I happened to be sitting with him and Mike Cameron one day, and he said, with all due respect to the guys who used to play, they didn't have to face four different guys. And he said, if I got four at-bats against the same guy, I better be damn good. I better be Hall of Fame type good because I'm good to begin with. This is a really, really different era we live in, especially with the matchups that can happen as quickly as they can, even more so in the National League.
You're exactly right, and that's why you are seeing the home runs and the strikeouts, because the way that I look at it, it's really hard to square up a ball right now against these great pitchers. These guys have ungodly stuff, 95 to 100-mile-an-hour fastballs. They're throwing a cutter and a sinker. They're throwing a curveball and a slider. And then when you can kind of process all that, okay, here's my change in my split. And so when you have that that type of talent on the mound. As a hitter, I'm saying, you know what? I have to swing hard and square this thing up, because I might only square up one ball today. In the entire game, I might square up one. I might as well swing hard, hopefully get it in the air, because even if I hit it hard on the ground, the shifts are going to take away all my hits. I mean, right-handed hitters, too. You barrel a ball up the middle as a right-handed hitter, it's an out because the second baseman's standing behind second. And so throw out everything that we knew about baseball in the previous generation and, you know, spreading out with two strikes and slapping the ball around, because at 95 to 100 miles an hour, when you're facing five different guys in a game, like you said, it's just so difficult to get the job done and put four or five great at-bats together.
You have enough going on, I'm sure, during the regular season, let alone in the postseason, but everybody knows about the history as of late with the Braves. If you're in that clubhouse, is that somewhere in the back of your mind?
I think you address it. I'm going to be honest with you. I mean, and as a Braves fan, I'm going to take off my ESPN hat here. As a Braves fan, I hope it's, you know, Freddie Freeman or Nick Markakis or one of the veteran guys that are saying, hey, listen, this is what they're saying about us, and this is why it's wrong. And we're going to – it's like the Twins, you know, against the Yankees, 13 straight. I hope they talked about it. But obviously it didn't work, but I want to get the elephant out of the room and say, this team right here is not going to be a team that doesn't get it done. Get the job done. We're going to be a team that wins this game. We got our home crowd behind us. We're in a new stadium, and you can kind of flip the script. It's almost like you got to face the demon, right? You got to look it right in the eye and say, I'm better than you, because this Braves team is better than the Cardinals. They are a better team, and they can win tonight if they just go out and play their game.
I don't know if you can play the emotional thing for an hour before a game and then try to take it out during a 3.5-hour game where there is as much sitting as there is in baseball. But does the Yadier Molina, bat chuck into right field, do you think that gets mentioned at any point? Or do you think it maybe has been mentioned already?
It's been mentioned. You know, that type of stuff gets mentioned when you're sitting having lunch or your pre-batting practice meal or the post-game meal maybe after game four. I'm kind of old school. I'm never one that wants to give bulletin board material to another team. And baseball is one of those weird sports that the subconscious creeps in because it's a long game, because you're sitting there, just sitting around a lot. There's a lot of dull moments in between action. That subconscious stuff crawls into your mind, and you're like, you know what? This guy's a jerk. I want to beat this guy for X, Y, and Z. So I think it actually can help a team. I think we saw the Red Sox last year blasting the New York all during, you know, the playoffs in the clubhouse because of what Aaron Judge did to them in Fenway. Those little things, while it doesn't seem like a big deal in baseball, because of the downtime, it can fuel you a little bit more because you don't have the adrenaline like you have in basketball or football.
You're an easy guy to ask because you played around Derek Jeter, and maybe he's the one that we just say, okay, let's take him out of the equation. This conversation, there's no such thing as clutch. There's no such thing as this. I don't know. I'll ask you. I've asked enough players, and there are players who are the 1% of the 1% of the 1% of doing this in the world who still say, oh, by the way, there are guys who are better than me. Their heart rate is in a much better place than mine was, or there are guys who are different in big moments. Do you think that's a fair or true statement?
It is a fair statement as long as you have a large sample size, right? I'd hate to take, you know, one Braves player, you know, whether it's Donaldson or even Freeman, even though we know he's beat up, and say, oh, well, he's not clutch. Well, listen, let's take their entire career. Let's look at what they've done with runners in scoring position in big situations, not just, you know, a 4 or 5-game playoff. But when you look at the Derek Jeters of the world, the David Ortizes of the world, Mariano Rivera, I played with a guy who, as a closer in a playoff game, over, game over. And then you also see some closers that, for whatever reason in the playoffs, they can't get any outs. You know, Carlos Martinez, the first two games, it looked like he was throwing batting practice. And so there is absolutely a clutch gene or a way to handle yourself in clutch situations. But I like to talk about those guys in really large sample sizes, like the Jeters and the Ortizes of the world.
What do you see happening tonight here in Atlanta?
Well, obviously I want the Braves to win, but what the Braves need to do is they need to understand that this is going to be a very typical game for them, where if Folty only goes 3 innings, I think the Braves are going to be in trouble, although it's all hands on deck. You need Folty to go out there and pitch really well, pitch into the 6th inning at least, maybe even into the 7th, because the back end of the bullpen, I think, has, other than Melanson's meltdown in game one, you know, I think it's solidified a little bit, and we can get a few outs in the seventh, eighth, and ninth innings. But if you try to mismatch and kind of throw all the rule books out the window, it's a little bit like what happened in game one. I thought that Keuchel had a bit of an early hook in game one, and it kind of threw off the rest of the game. So you need clutch hitting. You know, you need a strong start by Folty. And again, like I said, the Braves are a better team, and they can win tonight.
I brought this up about you in the past. You were the first guy that I remember because, that spring training when you were here for a calendar year, but it was over the course of two seasons. And I remember somebody asking you, I was standing there in spring training about, hey, would you do a long-term deal with the Braves right now? Do you remember what you kind of said that day?
I don't know. What did I say?
You said, I've waited six years to become a free agent. I'm becoming a free agent. And I gave you all the credit in the world because it was the honest answer. Instead of playing footsie, you just said, I've earned my right to be a free agent. I've played by the rules. And I just thought it was really refreshing that day.
Well, yeah, and you know what? One of the things that I knew about the Braves is that the Braves' MO is not to sign the big 8-10-year deal, right? So I knew that going in. I was fully prepared. And so what I told everybody, whether it was the media or friends or family, I mean, trust me, I had plenty of pressure from friends and family to stay in Atlanta. And I said, guys, I absolutely love it here, but I'm going to go to free agency. And if the Braves, if they do kind of sneak up and make me that great offer, and then awesome. Then I will stay a Brave for the rest of my career. But I didn't want to distract the team from, you know, we started that season with a good team. Now, everybody got hurt the first month of the season, as you guys remember, in 08. But I didn't ever want to be a distraction, and so I kind of threw it out there. Listen, let's not negotiate. Let's not talk about this. But, yeah, I'll be a free agent at the end of the season.
And can you explain to everybody why you might have more of a rooting interest in Brian McCann than anybody else? You guys are family.
If you don't know, yes, Brian McCann is my stepbrother. My dad married his mom a few years ago. And Brian, the cool thing is that my wife and I are the ones that introduced Tex and Sherry, and it's super cool to see them find love again in their later life. But Mac's one of my best friends to begin with, so it wasn't like, oh man, this guy, I played with this guy in Atlanta and New York, he's kind of a jerk and I don't want to hang out with him. I mean, me and Mac were boys, always respected him on and off the field, and so now I get to call him my stepbrother, which is pretty cool.
All right, now I can't get the movie Step Brothers out of my brain,
so
which
how
I'm sure
often?
You've heard a million times, Mark.
What? Did we just become best friends?
Yep.
The funny thing is that when that movie came out, Frenchie and Mac would recite the entire movie every single day. I mean, me and Chip were like, we were kind of the older guys on the team in 07 and 08, and we would just sit back and watch Mac and Frenchie go back and forth on all kinds of things. It was constant hilarity with those two.
And by the way, they live together. There's a good chance their setup was the same setup in the movie, sleeping in the same room, perhaps.
There's no doubt. And by the way, they were 21, 22 years old. They acted like teenagers. And by the way, if you made them go on a week-long trip, they'd still act like teenagers because they're so much fun. They have a blast. I love seeing what Frenchie's doing now on the broadcast. He's doing a great job. And obviously, you know, with Max still playing, I'm glued to the TV.
I've had a chance to meet your dad around the ballpark a couple of times as well. Can I ask, was he a... I don't know how it worked in your household with travel ball and everything else. I know a lot of guys can never repay their parents for the work that they did to get them to and from. I'm assuming that was the situation in your house?
No doubt. My dad was my number one fan, my best coach, my best friend, still is my best friend. And he played ball at the Naval Academy, knew he wasn't going to be a major leaguer, so didn't try to play after that. But he was a pretty good player back in his day, played center field, actually played with Bucky Dent in high school in Miami. So they were on the same team. I think they won two back-to-back state championships at Hialeah High School in Miami. But my dad, probably 17 years old, said, hey, Mark, I've taught you everything I know. You're better than I've ever been. Go out there and have fun. But he was my best coach until 17 years old.
I didn't know he was a military man because I got to tell you, the times I've met him, I have walked away thinking that man could kill me with his thumb.
Well, you're right. Your instincts were correct.
And he stands very straight. Like, I should have known that there was something there. My gut feeling was right about him.
Mark, he's a good man, and he'll be decked out in the Braves stuff today. He's been at every game and enjoying this series.
And by the way, congratulations on the stuff that you still do with Georgia Tech. I know that it probably, whatever, it doesn't mean much to hear somebody say it, but that program appreciates some of the things that you've done for them.
Well, I appreciate it. I wouldn't be where I am today without Georgia Tech, and absolutely love the city of Atlanta, and we'll eventually move back there full-time. I have both sets of grandparents are in Atlanta, and just love every minute of my time back there at Georgia Tech. And we're building something in football and basketball. Stick with us for a few years, but hopefully we can get it back on the right track.
Message received. Mark Teixeira, always a pleasure. We'll talk soon. Thanks for the time.
That was fun, guys.
Mark Teixeira from ESPN, obviously with plenty of ties to the Braves in the city of Atlanta, joining us on the Loud Security Systems Newsmaker line.